Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And of course, this is the time of the year where we want to talk about spooks and abnormal things and, well, maybe energies bumping in the night, whatever you want to come up with. Why? Because it's just that time of year. Halloween is just around the corner. And my guest today, Andrew, is just absolutely going to be sharing with us all kinds of wonderful things. And Andrew, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, good evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Andrew, you're a man that likes the unusual. Why do you think that's the case? Why do you think you're weird?
Well, I'm an unusual kind of guy. You mentioned this is the time of year for the abnormal, so I suppose I'm a bit abnormal. Actually, I don't think that's true. I think that most people are fascinated with the unknown and the unexplained. Many times people seek a little relief from the mundane world, and people have an innate drive toward the transcendent, I think. Carl Jung called that the transcendent function. And so I think that that's a natural part of the human experience. So in that sense, I don't think it's unusual. I've just perhaps taken the pursuit of the unusual and the unexplained a little farther than most people do.
Now, you did something with this book. You took a number of interviews and people that are highly respected in the areas of research with paranormal, like Lloyd Auerbach and Nick Redfern, yourself. I mean, you go in Raymond Buckland, Dr. Bob Coran, who's been a guest on my show more than once. He's one of these historians that comes up with some of the spookiest stuff, but there it is. You know, it's just marvelous. You did this. Why was it important for you to be able to get these people together so that they could tell their story?
Well, I think the most important aspect of this book is that it's very multidisciplinary. It represents a variety of different approaches to the topic of ghosts, spirits, and hauntings, and a variety of different conclusions, everything from psychological explanations to spiritistic explanations. So I think it's really a mixed bag, and that's one of the great attractions of the book, that people can really get just about anything they're looking for along those lines in this book.
Right at the very beginning, now there's a write-up by you at the very beginning regarding haunted houses, and you call them theaters of the mind. I think one of the most, how can I say, mystifying yet exciting things to do is to sit around and tell people that you've got spooks in your house or that you have something special that goes bump in the night. And immediately everybody's ears perk up and they have to hear everything that you say. Why is it for you that haunted houses have become so significant?
Well, haunted houses are fascinating on a variety of levels. I think that they are, as I said, they're a theater of the mind. They're a place where people can project their hopes and their fears, their fascination with the unexplained. But I think in addition to that, they're a type of living laboratory, unlike other types of anomalous experiences or paranormal experiences like UFOs, for example, which tend to happen in a variety of different places and tend to be very brief in duration. Hauntings tend to go on for years, decades, and sometimes even centuries in one specific localized area. And so it's possible to go into an area like that over and over again and continually research it to try to understand exactly what's going on. So it makes a perfect type of laboratory for research in psychic phenomena.
You make a comment in your book or in your article in the book, Ghost Spirits and Hauntings, and the big question, am I being haunted? You talk about how dreams are the key to unlock many of the mysteries of haunted houses. What's your favorite story relative to that? Because you investigate haunted houses, don't you?
Yes, I've investigated over 600 cases over the last 35 years in a variety of countries around the world and throughout the United States. So it's enabled me to reach a few pretty firm conclusions about the nature of hauntings and poltergeist-type cases. I think it's hard to pin down a single most interesting case. I'll give you two cases, one in which I was personally involved, and that is I investigated a castle in Denmark called Dralsholm Castle. And this castle is about 1,000 years old. It was originally built as a bishop's fortress. It was renovated into a hotel in recent decades. Also has a restaurant on the ground floor. And this is one of the few times when I actually experienced something myself, because there is a lady in white, they call her Denfita Dama in Danish, the lady in white that appears on the fourth floor of this hotel, of this castle. And it's been sighted for over 200 years. They have records in the castle of sightings of this going back centuries. And I interviewed a number of the staff members who had also seen this ghost, this apparition. And typically they either see the ghost, and it's, again, a young woman in a long white dress wearing a kind of veil, almost like a bridal veil, or sometimes they report hearing sobbing noises, but they don't actually see anything. And this is actually quite common. It's pretty unusual for a person to both see a ghost and hear a ghost at the same time. Usually it's either one or the other, and I have my own theories about that. But in any case, it's very interesting that there's a legend that goes along with this particular ghost, and the legend is that about 500 years ago, a young woman who was the daughter of one of the noblemen who owned the castle had had an affair with a stable hand and become pregnant. The family found out about this and was so enraged and humiliated by this, they felt that she had disgraced the family, that they decided to murder her. The legend doesn't say what they did to the stable hand, but I'm sure that wasn't pleasant either. But they held a big party, according to this legend. And this legend is centuries old. It's been passed down in this family for centuries. They held a big party. They invited all the relatives and friends, and they told them that the girl was to be sent to another country to live with other relatives, and had a big feast. And after the guests left, they put drugs into her food, and then they knocked her unconscious, and they walled her up inside the castle to suffocate. And the explanation of her going overseas was to take away any suspicion of her disappearance. And so this was a legend for centuries. Nobody knew whether there was any truth to this or not, but people did see this apparition of the lady in white on the fourth floor of this castle. But in the 1940s, while they were knocking holes in the fourth floor wall to put in new plumbing, they actually found the skeleton of a young girl. And the skeleton is still there to this day. You can still see it. They have put a piece of plexiglass up over the hole in the wall to keep tourists from stealing her bones for souvenirs, which was what was happening. They did have the bones identified by a museum as that those of a young woman. They couldn't tell whether she was pregnant or not at the time. She was about 500 years old, but she's on the fourth floor. Now, this is very interesting because the ghost is only seen on the fourth floor, and yet nobody knew that those bones were there until the 1940s, and that the ghost had been seen there for centuries. So that's interesting. Secondly, when I was investigating the fourth floor, about 10 o'clock one February night, it was very cold outside, but inside the castle they now have central heating, so it wasn't cold. I was taking readings there, and there's a theater on the fourth floor. It seats about 40 people, with a little stage and curtain where they used to put plays on for the nobility. I was in this theater, and suddenly the temperature of the room dropped about 15 degrees. It was a measurable drop in temperature very quickly. It got very cold. The magnetometer that I was using, the electromagnetic field detector, went off the scale. There was suddenly a surge of electromagnetic radiation. And I saw a movement out of the corner of my eye, so I turned to face the doorway, and a woman in a white dress moved silently by the doorway. Didn't hear anything at all. And this was momentarily pretty startling. I mean, obviously, I'm always there hoping to see something, but you never really expect to see something. And, of course, I went out into the hall immediately afterwards and looked down the hall, and there was no one there, and went down to the end of the hall. The doors down there were locked, so there was no way that anyone could have gotten out of that hallway. Later, I interviewed all the people that were in the hotel. I was the only guest that was staying there. There were a few staff members, but they were all down on the first floor in the restaurant at the time, and they all assured me that nobody had been up on the fourth floor. So that was a personal ghost sighting that I had, and that was
so cool.
A kind of a spooky experience.
Yes, it was. Well, who knows? maybe something changed a little bit when she finally was discovered. But it's fascinating how things like that end up being proven to be true. And here 500 years went by, and the legend was strong, so somebody knew the truth somewhere, and it was passed along, becoming the legend that eventually ended up being fulfilled. Fascinating
stuff. That's true. And that's one of the types of cases that parapsychologists are constantly looking for, what we call veridical cases, or cases that have some evidential component, and that would qualify as something that's evidential because both the legend and the sightings of the ghost had predated the discovery of the bones, so that gives a certain evidential value to this particular haunting.
I really enjoyed Bob Coran's section on poltergeists because this is something that I've known various people to have experiences with, and usually it occurs with someone that's in their teenage years, that's in the household or close by in environment. And he did such a good job in covering so many different points about the problems with poltergeists, one that can be doggone irritating and very inconvenient. But he starts off the story in his book about 1710, a recording of an individual being hit by a bunch of stones. And people have talked about these experiences for centuries. Have you ever had an encounter with a poltergeist?
Oh, I've had a number of encounters with poltergeists. In fact, the very first poltergeist that I investigated back in the 1970s involved stones raining down on the roof, and it was witnessed by myself and three other people with hundreds of stones raining down on the roof, as well as powerful blows coming from the floors, from the ceilings, from the walls, as if someone were standing on the other side hitting the boards with a hammer. And a board flew up the stairs, narrowly missing my head and an investigator that was with me. So that was really the first. It wasn't the first one I'd investigated, but it was the first one that I had ever experienced personally. Since then, I've seen a number of other cases. The most interesting poltergeist case that I can think of is a case that took place in upstate New York a number of years ago that I investigated. It was the home, and it was a recently built home, and there was no teenager in this particular case. It was an emergency room physician and his wife and their infant son that shared this mm-hmm. house. And they began having typical poltergeist-type experiences initially, but then it progressed into a much more what we call type 2 poltergeist or smart poltergeist. Most poltergeist activity is very random and doesn't seem to demonstrate any particular intelligence or any interpersonal communication. But in this particular case, it did develop to that point where you initially had objects that would be stacked in patterns, for example. Initially, he was sending me photographs of this. There would be bottles in the laundry room, for example, bottles of laundry detergent that would be stacked in a pyramid shape, or cans of food in the kitchen taken out of the cabinet and stacked on the counters in various patterns and shapes. The chairs in the living room or the chairs in the dining room would be stacked on top of the dining room table. Sometimes the living room would be completely ransacked with all the furniture simply turned over and objects just strewn about. There was a 200-pound grandfather clock, and this was something that I didn't personally witness, but I came very close to witnessing it. I actually heard it when I was investigating the case. I was in the living room interviewing the physician. His wife was not in the house at all. The infant son was upstairs asleep, and we heard a scraping sound coming from the hallway, which was not more than 20 feet away. Both of us immediately went out to the hall, and the grandfather clock had turned completely around facing the wall. And it was not like that before, just minutes before. And it took both of us, and I'm a pretty good-sized man, took both of us to turn this grandfather clock back around the way it had been. So whatever this was, it had a tremendous amount of strength. But the most interesting and somewhat frightening experience that these folks had in this house, and this was not one that I personally witnessed, but they were eating dinner downstairs in the dining room when the master bedroom, which was immediately over their heads upstairs, their infant son was upstairs asleep in his crib in another bedroom. And as they were eating dinner, they heard sounds up in the master bedroom as if the furniture were being moved around. So they immediately went upstairs to find out, what was going on. first thing that they noticed was that the master bedroom door was closed, and they remember they had left it open. When they opened the door, there was a large stuffed easy chair that was next to the bed, and this easy chair was now on top of the bed. And sitting in the easy chair was a very large stuffed teddy bear, which had been in the crib of their sleeping son down the hall, was now sitting in the easy chair, sitting on top of the bed. And I have a photograph they sent me of this. And this obviously frightened them, because whatever this was had been in the room with their infant son, had taken this teddy bear out. The infant son could not even walk at this point, so it certainly wasn't the child that was doing this. And they went down the hall, of course, to check on the child. The child was fine, except that the teddy bear was missing from the crib and was now sitting in the easy chair, which was on top of their master bed. And this frightened them. This frightened them. And they had a couple of other frightening experiences, too. They actually had gone out of town to a physician's conference, came back to town. The doctor called me about 2 o'clock in the morning, and he and his wife had gone, and the child had gone to a motel because they were frightened, because they had come back from this physician's conference, and they found that all of the knives in their kitchen had been taken out of the drawers and out of their various holders and stuck into the walls. So all the knives were stuck into the walls, and this frightened them, understandably. So ultimately, they moved out of this house. So this was not a typical poltergeist case, which, as you said, usually revolves around an adolescent, more often a girl than a boy. But it was more of what would you call a haunting poltergeist or a smart poltergeist. There seemed to be actually something there that was interacting with them in a meaningful way. So that was a kind of a frightening type of case.
Well, make a good movie, if nothing else. What I wanted to ask you was, had they been living in this house before the child was born?
The child was born while they were living in the house.
Okay, but they had lived there prior.
For a brief time, yes. Yeah,
okay,
the house
and they
was
had
built.
Not
they
had any
they
problem.
Had the house built. No, they had had the house built. And I felt that if there was a focus to this case, although as in most poltergeist cases, you have a particular person, again, often an adolescent, who is the epicenter or focus, or the term we use is agent, of the poltergeist. There didn't seem to be a specific agent here. For one thing, the effects seemed to occur even when everyone was out of the house, which is not typical for a poltergeist activity. But in this particular case, if there were a particular focal person, it would have had to have been the wife. And yet, there was no way she could have been faking these phenomena, because many of these things occurred while she was either out of the room, or they were witnessed by other people as well, other people that had come to the house, other visitors. And I interviewed several of these who were all very credible witnesses. None of them, including the physician and his wife, were interested in publicity at all. They didn't want mm-hmm. anyone to find out about this. So they were extremely credible witnesses. So I have no explanation for this other than there appeared to be some type of entity there. And mm-hmm. there was a two-way communication that took place. I had suggested that they get a small dry erase board, whiteboard, and mount it on the wall in the kitchen, and that they write messages on the board to the ghost and ask this ghost who it was and so on. And I didn't, I knew that there were cases of so-called smart poltergeists, like the Borley Rectory case in England, where writing appeared on the wall. So sometimes I suggest this in cases of this type. And in this case, they did get messages back. They would write a message like, "Who are you?" And then they would come back later, and there would be a message written up there. And interestingly, the ghost or spirit identified itself as Little Waquita, which sounds like a parody of a Native American name. I researched the name, and the only thing I could find was that there was an Indian tribe or Native American tribe in that area called Waquita. There were a few things like motels and resorts and campgrounds that were named Waquita in that area of upstate New York. But otherwise, I wasn't able to find out anything about it. But the whatever this was identified itself as Little Waquita. And there were other messages left, too, usually very brief in a kind of childlike scrawl left on this whiteboard. So again, under normal circumstances in a case like that, I would strongly suspect a hoax. But in this particular case, with a combination of the things that I personally experienced or came very close to experiencing in the house, combined with the credibility of the witnesses and other witnesses outside the family experiencing these things, I have to say that I think that it was a genuine case and a very unusual one.
My question would be, could it have been an area where there was a burial ground? Because if that was formerly Indian ground, it could have been that this poltergeist, or this ghost, actually, to me, a poltergeist, the poltergeist activity frequently, as you mentioned, is generated by an agent of some kind. There's an energy frequency that creates a lot of distortion. But this one is such an unusual case that you've mentioned. And the fact that she was willing to identify herself, it could be that the bringing of the child into the house, she attached herself in some way. And then as they became more and more frightened or became more responsive to them, to her, then she seemed to gain more of an energy field. Now, was the house sold, and do you know if the activity ceased?
I don't know if the activity ceased. I haven't had any contact with the current owners of the house, and I'm not sure if it sold. I lost contact with the physician and his family after they moved out of the house. I know that the last time I spoke to them, they had had no further activity, so it certainly appeared to be place-oriented, more like a haunting mm-hmm. than person-centered, mm-hmm. like a typical poltergeist. But again, we don't find that to be that unusual. You know, most people in much of the literature tends to make a sharp distinction between hauntings and poltergeists, hauntings being place-centered, longer in duration, and more likely to include visible apparitions or ghosts, poltergeists being person-centered, you know, more often short in duration, and tend not to have visible apparitions occur. But in my experience, in this more than 35 years now of investigating these cases, that's really a false dichotomy. That really, there are many cases that fall in between. There are many mm-hmm. cases. There are classic haunting cases, more like Drowsholm Castle that I mentioned, and of course there are classic poltergeist cases, cases involving adolescent girls that appear to be psychokinetic, appear to be generated by the minds of the individuals. But there are many, many cases that seem to have aspects of both. I have seen classic poltergeist cases evolve into hauntings, and I've seen hauntings that exhibit poltergeist activity. So it appears to be more of a continuum or a spectrum where you have classic poltergeist cases on one end of the spectrum, classic hauntings on the other, and then you have a variety of gradations in between that include characteristics of both.
I agree. Also, something that's fascinating when it comes to ghosts, I know we had purchased, and this is a few years ago, we had purchased a piece of furniture that was a Victorian-style desk. It was a lady's desk, and we still have it today. And we had been living in an apartment, my husband and I. My daughter was with us. And after we got that piece of furniture, we were unaware of the fact that apparently we had a rocking chair in the room where this piece of furniture was, that there was a ghost that had come with that piece of furniture, because we found out we had to move. My husband was transferred, and we were upstairs, and the manager of the apartment building kept getting complaints from the people that were underneath us, saying, "My goodness, we are so tired of this rocking chair that keeps rocking and rocking and rocking." We didn't know anything about it. My daughter was in an adjacent bedroom. She didn't know anything about it. And when we found out about this, because we had to be in bed very early at night, and this would occur between midnight and 2 in the morning. So naturally, the people downstairs were very unhappy with this special sound effect that they were getting, because it was right over their bedroom. And we learned when we moved out, she asked us, she said, are you guys up usually at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning? And my husband and I looked at each other wondering why she asked the question. We said, no. What is there a problem? And she said, well, this is what's been happening. And this had been going on for months, and we didn't have any idea about it. So we had had a ghost that came with the desk.
And that's not unusual. You know, the idea of haunted objects or possessed possessions, as some people call them, is certainly a very common one. And one of the things that I will typically recommend to a family, if they have a haunting that suddenly begins, having not experienced this phenomena before, then I will often ask them if they've acquired any antiques or other possessions recently. And if the answer is yes, I'll ask them to remove that from the house temporarily to see if that has an effect on the hauntings. And in some cases, it does. So there mm-hmm. appears to be a kind of, you know, parapsychologists, we use the term place memory and object memory. that both places and objects can retain a kind of charge. In some cases, it's a telepathic charge where you're getting information through dreamlike experiences or apparitional experiences. You're getting information from things that occurred in the past in the history of that particular object, or in the case of a haunted house in that particular place. But then you also have a type of psychokinetic charge that can be associated with particular places or objects. In the case of an object like a rocking chair, that charge is a type of residual energy that may cause it to rock at a particular time of day, for example, because there was someone who owned that object in the past that was in the habit of rocking in that chair at a particular time of day, and that set up a kind of an energy pattern associated with that object that can be triggered later by someone who's suitably psychically sensitive in the vicinity. So you can have an object that has a particular psychokinetic charge in that way. And I've also had cases where there were particular places in a house that had a psychokinetic charge. For example, I had a case with a rocking chair where the rocking chair would rock by itself. And I suggested that they move the rocking chair to a different place in the house. And sure enough, the rocking chair didn't rock there. So when I discovered that, I brought in actually an old toy rocking horse, and I told them to put it in the same spot where the rocking chair had been. And so now the rocking horse would rock. So it wasn't the chair in this case that had the charge, but rather that particular location. And from talking to the neighbors, there had been an elderly woman who had lived in the house previously who would spend hours every day sitting in front of the window rocking in her rocking chair, a different rocking chair, but sitting in that same spot because that was the best spot to get the light through the window. And, of course, these folks moved in with their rocking chair. They put theirs in the same spot, and so their rocking chair was behaving in the same way, theoretically, because of this psychokinetic charge. So I don't think there was any actual ghost involved, but I do think there was a type of energy residue from the past that was causing these movements.
We have neighbors that share ghost stories with us about what they've seen in their home, and it was so much fun because in the process of the conversation, I told them about the visitors that we have in our house. It doesn't bother us at all, and how one time I had been by myself in the house, and we have a little Scottish Terrier at that time. His name was Smokey, and he just started barking and barking and barking, and just he was looking, and I knew he was seeing something. And it was just driving him crazy. And because I was by myself, he was always very protective of me. I knew that this was something that was upsetting him, so I just said out loud, "Whoever you are, I don't know who you are. Please go away. You're really bothering my dog." And as soon as I did that, bingo, he calmed down. So many times there are those people or those energies that decide they want to come by and visit, or maybe they like your environment. They've discovered you. But we learned that the area we live in was often frequented by Indians. And for many generations, there was this valley area, which is near Chambers Creek, and they would fish there because the salmon came down through the creek. So prior to the homes being built here, this also had been a logging environment. There had been camps where people had been in this area. So there's a lot of history sometimes that goes on in an area, and those memory frames sometimes are activated. But I don't think it's necessarily an unpleasant thing to have a ghost.
No, in fact, in many cases it's not. Many people that I interact with are quite happy and content with their ghosts and their haunted houses. I have a case here near Gainesville in Archer, Florida, the Kosicki house, and they've gotten a lot of publicity over the years with their house, and they've been kind enough to allow me to bring my students there for the last 10 years. So that they can practice investigating hauntings, and they've gotten very fond of their ghosts and have no desire to get rid of them whatsoever. So in those cases, most of the time when people call me in cases like that, what they're really asking for is validation. You know, they want some type of validation and endorsement. But there are other cases where people are seriously frightened or disturbed by these experiences and want to get rid of them in some way.
Well, your book, Ghosts, Spirits, and Hauntings, and the question, Am I Being Haunted? It makes for a wonderful read. So many different authors contributed to this publication. My guest has been Andrew Nichols. Andrew, what's your website so people can check out more information about you?
The website is the American Institute of Parapsychology, www.parapsychologylab.com. And I also have another book, which is called Ghost Detective, Adventures of a Parapsychologist, that gives a lot more detail about my investigations and my methods.
Well, okay, so parapsychologylab.com?
That's correct.
All right. Well, check it out because it is fabulous. And I just think it makes for a great read. And if it's intriguing to you, I guarantee it'll give you nothing else, something to talk about, especially on Halloween. This is Donna Sebo, Andrew Nichols. Thank you so much for being my guest today. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now opening for you, 888-627-6008. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Aren't these stories fascinating? Everyone seems to have a story of their own. Let me share one with you when it comes to spooky situations. I had just made certain people aware when I used to work for National Cash Register in Beverly Hills. I had a conversation with people because I was in the throes of learning a lot about the psychic area, parapsychology, etc. And this one young lady, her name was Deb. She had one blue eye and one green eye. Now, there's not very many people that have that color combination in the eyes. Extremely slender, and she was a very reserved person. And I'll never forget her stopping by to tell me a story. She and a girlfriend had rented an apartment that was on the beach. They both loved the ocean. And this apartment was an older building. And she said, "I seem to attract some of the most unusual situations." I said, "Oh, really?" And she goes, "Yeah." I said, "Well, what's happened to you that's really strange?" She said, "Well, our apartment is haunted." Now, my girlfriend never sees or hears anything, but she said, "I do." But she said, "I have to tell you, Donna, that just night before last, I had an experience I've never had before. There was a small entry area into the apartment, and they had put a large mirror there. And she stood in front of the mirror primping before she was going to walk out to go on a date, and this woman's face appeared in the mirror. And she said, "I didn't know quite what to do, but her face was very pleasant and she was looking back at me, and then the face disappeared." But she said, "I've seen that face more than once, and the only place I see it is in the mirror." Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you've ever seen Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, you know there's that talking mirror. That's right. Well, anyway, that was Deb's story. And, oh, there are so many more that people have shared with me. Okay, we've got a caller on the line. Let's show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show, 888-627-6008. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, my name's Alex, and I'm calling from Grants Pass, Oregon.
Oh, hi, Alex. Ooh, Grants Pass. It's probably getting pretty cold there right now.
Yeah, it is actually. It's been fall is definitely here. It's getting chilly in the morning, but it's still sunny and brisk in the afternoon.
Oh, we have some friends that lived down in that area, and it is just so gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. But, yep, it's getting cool, and winter is just around the corner. Well, Alex, let's get down to business with you. The first thing that I'm seeing is in relationship to business. You've got some concepts and ideas that you would like to work with and would like to have come into a positioning where you're going to have a financial flow that will work for you efficiently and well. This is going to be possible. You do need to do some brainstorming with some people as far as marketing goes, because you are going to be utilizing technology. And it looks like it may have an internet aspect to it that I think would be very positive. But you really need to brainstorm to find out the most cost-effective way of doing what you have in mind. Your marketing is going to be extremely important and very necessary. So you want to be able to look at what niche you want to fill and how you're going to bring the exposure for what it is that you want to do into positioning. And I think it is important for you to add to your library. Apparently you have a love of history. And I'm seeing a number of pieces of material coming, published material, that is coming in to your environment. And many of these publications, I think, will come from secondhand bookstores. But you're going to find that your library is going to be very, very useful to you. And you may need to rearrange how you've got certain rooms set up in your living space so that you can have things filed and categorized so that you can find whatever you're looking for easily. I do think you are going to be doing more traveling this winter than what you anticipate, and I want you to be sure that I'm looking at two vehicles that need to be in tip-top shape. Don't assume anything. Have it taken care of, winterized, whatever you need to do. Let's make sure those vehicles are in good shape, because you're going to be driving across some pretty, well, some pretty icy roads. So I want you to be alert and on guard. I don't see anything happening to you, but I think being wise is always important here. So take care. What question would you like to ask me today?
Okay, it's interesting what you're saying right now. I'm really tracking with you. My big question is, do I need to relocate to make this all flow right? That's kind of the question that I have right now. I've kind of felt like where I've been living actually is for a while wasn't working for me, and so I started making some movement to try to relocate. And then now things have started to kind of open up for me, and so it's kind of confused me on whether I need to, you know, decide to keep going on the relocation or kind of stay where I'm at and see what continues to happen.
Well, so, I would recommend.
And when I say relocate, it's not very far either. I'm talking like, you know, maybe an hour away from where I live now. So.
Well, I would like for you just to stay put, because I think you've got homework to do before you choose to make a move. There are things that you really need to get clarity on. Now, you may need to travel someplace to meet up with somebody that can give you the clarity, but there may even be some classes that you have to take. But that's what I see as being important. That's what you need to do for yourself. So I don't think it would be wise financially. I don't think it would be wise on any level for you to pick up, pack, and move right now. If you should decide you want to move, you're going to have to think it out very carefully. Because when I'm looking at the business, you want to make sure that where you are, you're going to be in a very positive positioning with what I'd call the power grid. And you're going to need to make sure that you have a backup system should there ever be a power failure. And I just think you just need to stay where you are for right now. The move isn't that big a deal. When you decide you want to move, I think it's all going to fall into place. I really do. I'm not too concerned about you at all, Alex. I just want you to be aware that you've got to think things through, because you've got something that's working for you, and it's going to take time to build the momentum.
Okay.
And again, when the time comes for you to move, yes, you're going to move, but not right now.
So you see a move coming, but not now?
Right.
Okay. And when you say library, are you talking about my own personal library? You're not talking about the library, like the public library, right? You're talking about
what I get.
Okay, I got you.
Yes,
okay.
Because that always has been a desire of yours. You really love learning, and you love books.
You know, what's funny is I went through a time where I didn't, where I got away from it, but then it's come back recently to where, yes, I have a strong desire for that. So.
And I just think it's going to enrich your life so much. So go for it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're very welcome. You have a marvelous weekend now.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Take care. This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to call in and chat, the telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. Now, I want to take a moment for those of you in Western Washington. There is a class coming up on November the 12th. I'm going to be presenting the class along with Robert Newman. It's called The Quantum Mind. I'm going to be talking about empowering you relative to psychic ability, and Robert's going to be empowering you, showing you how feng shui can make your life better. So we're going to leave you or give you tools that you can work with on a daily basis that are easy to utilize, and the class is limited to 25 people. So we're limiting it to 25 people because we want to be able to interact with each of you that attend. Now, this is Saturday, November the 12th. The location is Bridgeport Place at 5250 Bridgeport Way West. The hours of the class, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Doors will open at 9:15 a.m. for registration. Admission is $39.95 prepaid or $45 at the door. Give me a call if you would like to be a part of this class, 253-582-5604, and we'll put you down on the list of attendees. This is going to be absolutely marvelous. I'm so excited about it, and I love to teach, Robert loves to teach, and we've just got so many special things that are going to be occurring with this class. So if you can, give me a buzz, 253-582-5604, or send me an email, Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and let me know that you want to come, and we'll take it from there. Be sure to give me your contact information as well. Meanwhile, if you want to chat with me, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. That's the telephone number to call into. Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, we've got winds a-blowing, temperatures are dropping, fewer and fewer leaves on the trees, but I'll tell you, some species of trees are just glorious to see. But the winds have started coming in, so a lot of the colored, beautiful leaves are being blown off of those limbs that are just filled with this radiant color. And I wanted to share with you that this is just a marvelous time to fix those foods that are hearty and are just absolutely, oh, they just feel good foods. And one of my favorites is soup. To me, it's just, I don't know, it just feels warm and cozy. And, of course, anything can be put into a soup. But how about a recipe for chicken and sausage gumbo? Well, when we come back from our break, I'll be sharing that recipe with you. But if you're like me, maybe you fix the whatever soup. Yep, that's what I call my soup. It's whatever's left over in the refrigerator that I want to mix and match with. And it's amazing how delicious that turns out. The chicken and sausage gumbo, when we come back, I'll share that with you. And also some other fun stuff about a sanctuary for pigs and other animals. Oh, my goodness. We've got so much to share today. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, got that pad of paper and pen handy. Here we go. This is such an easy recipe. Now, this is going to be on the spicy side. You can make it as spicy as you want or just that little hint of heat. Perfect, perfect for this time of the year, fall, winter. Oh, yum, and with freshly baked bread and butter. Yum, yum, yum. Good, good, good. Okay, here we go. You're going to need about a half a pound of boneless, skinless chicken breast. Now, if you're not a chicken person, use beef. Use pork, whatever you want. But anyway, half a pound of chicken breast cutlets. You're going to need, an eighth of a teaspoon of salt, an eighth of a teaspoon of pepper. You're going to need 12 ounces, and that's about 4 lengths of your fully cooked chicken sausage. Now, chicken sausage, when you buy it at the store, depending on where you get it from, can be sort of spicy, and then they have that is not so spicy. So pick whatever is your favorite preference. Then you're going to need a can. Oh, by the way, you need to cut the sausage into little coins. You know, just cut that up, whether you want it fine coins or you want chunky coins, whatever you do, just chop up those 4 links. And then you're going to need a can, about 14 and a half ounces of diced tomatoes with green chilies. Now, that's not very spicy, but it just gives a little bit of color into the soup. It's really nice. Then you're going to need about 3 cups of reduced fat-free chicken broth. Now, if you want to use beef for this, then use beef broth, and instead of the chicken links, you can use a spicy beef sausage or something else that's your preference. Remember, you can play around with this recipe. You're going to need 2 cups of frozen cut okra, and you're going to need 1.5 cups of chopped celery, 1 green pepper, you want to seed that and chop that up. You need 1 large onion, chop that up. And 1.5 teaspoons of dry Cajun seasoning, 1 teaspoon of chopped garlic, teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, and a teaspoon of ground thyme. Now, if you're fixing chicken or if you want the beef flavor, whichever is your preference, you go and season it with a little bit of salt and pepper, and then you want to put this all in a crock pot. What I like about this, if you don't have a crock pot, you can do this right on the top of the stove. You put all of the ingredients, every one of them, right in the pot. So whether it's on the top of the stove or in a crock pot. Crock pot is optimum because you can really control the temperature. But if you want to do it on the top of the stove, you can do the same thing too. And just stir it, cover it, and you're going to need to cook it in a crock pot on high for 3 to 4 hours or on low 7 to 8. I like to put all of my ingredients in the pot, put it on the minimum temperature if I'm cooking it on the top of the stove, and just leave it alone. Put a lid on so that you don't lose the moisture from the soup, and just put the lid on and just let it do its thing. Leave it alone. Let it cook overnight. I've done that many times. Now, the chicken, you want to take that out, put it in a large bowl, and you want to shred it if you're going to use chicken. You can do the same thing with beef or with pork if you wanted to do that. And then you want to put it all back into the crock pot, give it a stir, and you got it. Now, this is going to be thickened a little bit because of the okra. Okra has its own distinct flavor. Now, if you're one of those people that does not like okra, oh, for heaven's sakes, use green beans. Use whatever is your favorite vegetable. I would suggest for this soup, you could even take a small bag of mixed vegetables, which has corn, bell pepper in it. You know, you can get it at the grocery store. Just a small package of frozen vegetables. Rip it open, put it in the pot, and just let it go. It is so wonderful to be able to fix soups and then taste it. Remember, you don't want to add too much salt. You want the flavors to all marry. And this kind of soup freezes up beautifully. And lots of times when I'm busy, I just pull out my containers where I've fixed up batches of soup and I've put them in the freezer. I take them out. They make a wonderful meal, and you have your favorite grated cheese, whether it's cheddar or Parmesan, whatever you like, and you put it on there, croutons. Even when you serve a soup, if you have little bowls of items that your family maybe may like, say, put whatever you want in the soup. You know, little goldfish, whatever you have, it's wonderful. But I do love good Italian bread with soups and butter, and of course, if you have any homemade preserves, those are always good to add to it as well. Okay, I wanted to share this story. By the way, don't forget, you can call me if you'd like directly, 888-627-6008. Here in the Pacific Northwest, people are really fond of animals. And we have a number of sanctuaries in the Pacific Northwest that people actually can visit. And I found out about a sanctuary that I had no clue about, and it's a sanctuary for pigs. It's in Stanwood, Washington. And I was surprised. I just didn't realize there was a sanctuary for pigs. Now, how this sanctuary started, it was in 1994, and there was a woman by the name of Judy Woods saying, pot-bellied pigs had become a very popular pet. Well, they didn't stay cute and small. Pot-bellied pigs can get to be huge. Pigs are extremely intelligent animals. And she said these people that thought they were so cute and adorable, they didn't understand them, and they really abused them. Well, Judy, she decided she wanted to create a sanctuary. She's got 34 acres. They have 200 pigs, and there's a small assortment of other animals that need a home. And she said, the stories about these animals are really heartbreaking. There was a pig called Grace who was put in a bathtub. Now, can you imagine putting a pig in a bathtub? That's where they kept her. That's how big she got. And she was in that bathtub so long her toenails turned into spirals, and consequently she couldn't even walk. These people just, it makes you wonder why people even adopt animals. Then there were two pigs, Herman and Arlo. They ran away from a farm where their tails had been cut. Then there was a pig called Betsy who had to rest her head on the body of a dead friend to keep from drowning in the muck she'd been forced to live in. Now, it's called the Pigs Peace Sanctuary, and they live the remainder of their lives out here. They've got lots of space to roam, and they just are well-loved and well-cared for. And there was a little girl that was at the sanctuary one day she was on a tour. She said, if I were a pig, this is where I'd be. And the tours are by appointment only. Donations are always appreciated. And you go to their website, pigspeace.org, pigspeace.org. to find out more about this sanctuary for pigs. Well, this is Donna Siebel. My goodness, we're out of time. This hour has just flown by. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, God bless. Have a fabulous weekend. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. If you're going to be going to Halloween parties, take care, be wise. And if you drink, have a friend drive. This is Donna Siebel. Talk to you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.